It's Thursday, the 21st of November, 2024, and time again for Northland Views here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer reader and Flagstaff, Chuck Kaufman, bringing you news from the WilliamsNews.com website, news of Williams and the Grand Canyon. And today, our headlines include Gratitude in Every Message, Anonymous Woman's Note Campaign Spreads Kindness in the Spirit of Thanksgiving. Federal and state officials seek assistance in investigation of Mexican wolf death near parks. And Yavapai County investigator advises how to handle fraud scam calls. So turning to our first article by Morgan Smith, Gratitude in Every Message, Anonymous Woman's Note Campaign Spreads Kindness in the Spirit of Thanksgiving. This is from the 19th of November, Williams. In times that often feel disconnected and underappreciated, a local Williams resident is making an effort to bring the community closer through the gift of kindness. Choosing to stay anonymous and going by the name Dagny Reardon, inspired by the book Atlas Shrugged, this resident has started an anonymous note campaign around Williams to thank those that have dedicated their time and efforts to the community just in time for Thanksgiving. I'm happy to live in Williams, and there are so many people and great things to be thankful for, Reardon said. Reardon's inspiration for the note campaign sparked one evening while she was gathering with friends at the Wild West Junction. As they talked, she noticed how often people praised the town's unique qualities and the individuals who make it so special. That's when it hit her. More people needed to hear about this gratitude. Reardon said in that moment she came up with her idea for the kindness notes. There's all these people saying nice things about Williams, and I'm thinking, you know what? Nobody else hears this, she said. Reardon began asking people around town what their favorite things about Williams are and discovered an endless list of qualities ranging from the sunsets at dusk to the peace and tranquility of the town and the occasional deer and quail that roam in their backyards. Wanting to create a campaign for kindness without receiving anything in return, Reardon came up with the idea to leave envelopes at common locations in Williams for people to leave notes. She decided to leave envelopes inside the Williams Library, the post office, the local Safeway, the National Bank, Old Trails, True Value, and the Williams Grand Canyon News, where people are encouraged to leave a small thank you note for anything they are thankful for. Everybody has something they want to say, right? Reardon said, we need a little good this Thanksgiving. Reardon decided to keep her thank you note campaign a physical one. She believes having a physical note creates a personal, lasting impact that can be often lost nowadays in digital media. The envelopes were available for note placing until November 19th, after which they'll be published in the next Williams Grand Canyon News edition for all to read in time for Thanksgiving. I'm just doing it from the heart, you know. The cost is not relevant, she said. We should appreciate that we live in such a lovely place. Reardon said she's thankful for the hardworking efforts of the local community members that commit their time to creating a safe and comfortable town to live in. Her list of gratitude includes the City Works Department of Williams, the Sanitation Department, Kim and Dale Curitan at Old Trails True Value, Grand Canyon Railway and the Polar Express crew, the Cataract Creek Gang, the Grand Masters of the annual Christmas Parade, and tree lighting, and many more. Reardon said she'd like to do the campaign again next Thanksgiving and hopes that this inaugural year of the Note Project will inspire more people to write thank you messages in the future. And that's Gratitude in Every Message. Anonymous Woman's Note Campaign Spreads Kindness in the Spirit of Thanksgiving. Turn now to federal and state officials seek assistance in the investigation of Mexican wolf death near parks. This is from the 16th of November, Phoenix. A federally protected Mexican wolf was found dead northwest of Flagstaff, Arizona on November 7th. Female Mexican wolf 2979, F2979, was found dead in the vicinity of Forest Service Road 2058 and East Spring Valley Road. The incident is under investigation and a reward of up to $103,500 is available for information that leads to successful prosecution in the case. No additional details about the cause of death are being shared at this time, except that the mortality was not related to agency management actions. Mexican Wolf F2979 was first documented outside the Mexican Wolf Experimental Population Area, the MWEPA, north of Interstate 40, near Flagstaff in early summer 2024. She was captured, affixed with a GPS collar, and released back into the wild in July. DNA analysis revealed that she had dispersed from the Two Dill Hill pack in the MWEPA. F2979 was seen traveling with another Mexican wolf in the area in efforts to capture the pair and translocate them back to the MWEPA were initiated in October. These efforts were ongoing when F2979 was found dead. The fate of the other Mexican wolf seen with F2979 is unknown. The service is offering a reward of up to $50,000. The Arizona Game and Fish Department's Operation Game Thief is offering a reward of up to $1,000, and the New Mexico Department of Game and Fish is offering a reward of up to $1,000 for information leading to the conviction of the individuals responsible for the death of the Mexican wolf. A variety of non-governmental organizations and private individuals have pledged additional funding for a total reward amount of up to $51,500, depending upon the information provided. Anyone with information on individuals in the area where the wolf was found or information they believe may be helpful are urged to call U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service special agents in Pine Top, Arizona at 346-254-0515. Killing a Mexican wolf is a violation of state law and the Federal Endangered Species Act and can result in criminal penalties of up to $50,000 and or not more than 1 year in jail and or a civil penalty of up to $25,000. That's federal and state officials seek assistance in investigation of Mexican wolf death near parks. Our next article is by Marilyn R. Sheldon. Yavapai County investigator advises how to handle fraud scam calls. Hang up, delete, do not click. That was the advice given by Yavapai County Sheriff's Office fraud investigator Ron Norfleet for how to handle frauds and scams during a presentation Tuesday, November the 12th at the Ash Fork Public Library. Scams are prevalent in Arizona. The state is ranked number one per capita in the United States for seniors who are scammed, in large part by romance scams. Scammers work on emotions and get their victims to send money to them for a variety of reasons, Norfleet said. One Arizona woman sent $888,000 to a scammer, supposedly in France, during a one-year period. She was sure she was in love with him. Romance scammers will often explore social media looking for victims in a method dubbed love bombing. It's often difficult to get victims to acknowledge they've been taken in. They're certain they've met the perfect person they're going to spend the rest of their life with. Another popular method is to tell a potential victim that they've won the lottery or a sweepstakes. The scammer then asks for money to process the win. You never have to spend money when you've won money, Norfleet said. These guys don't give up, Norfleet said. Once they get you to answer the phone, their buddy will call you back a couple of weeks later. If you do answer the phone, they'll ask you a question they want you to answer yes to. Never say yes to anyone you don't know on the phone. It's safest to only answer the phone when you recognize the number that's calling. The scammer may pretend to have a bad connection on the phone and ask if the victim can hear them. If you answer yes, the scammer can paste that answer onto an audio recording to provide alleged consent for them to take money from the victim's bank account. Email scams can be identified many times through a Google search. To do a search, take the first several words of the soliciting email and do a Google search. Oftentimes, there will be hundreds of responses indicating the email is a scam. In many instances, the soliciting email will look like it was sent by one's bank or other legitimate source. To check the email of the sender, compare the address of the suspect email with the address known to you. Another method is for scammers to do research on schoolmates or family members and then call or email the intended victim, pretend to be a friend or relative of their target, and tell them they're stuck in a foreign country and their passport and money have been stolen. A set of grandparents in Arizona had one such call, supposedly from their grandson. They sent a large sum of money to the scammer only to discover their grandson was at home and had not made the call. Rather than calling the grandson or other family members to confirm the issue, they sent the money and wound up losing their house over the matter. Just as an aside, I had a personal friend of mine who was caught by one of these scams, and in this case, he had somebody call him saying that he was a lawyer and that his son was in jail. So they sometimes do a little bit of research, and they can pass the call off as legitimate, so you have to be extremely careful. To continue the article, one of the newest scams is cryptocurrency. According to Norfleet, due to the anonymity of the transaction, the sheriff's office is unable to help victims in those situations. The method is simple. The victim is instructed to go to a retail store and buy a crypto wallet. Three individuals paid a total of $54,000 to this scam. Don't ever give anyone access to your banking information, he added. If you're uncertain of the legitimacy of a call, you can hang up, dial 3260 to have the caller identified. That's 3260. Yavapai County Investigator advises how to handle fraud and scam calls was the name of this article. Our next article from the 19th of November, Williams Unified School District approves additional maintenance position. This article is by Morgan Smith. She writes from Williams. After recognizing the increased efforts of the current maintenance crew and the mass amount of work needed at the Williams schools, the Williams Unified School District Governing Board approved an additional maintenance position for the 2025 fiscal year at the November 13th regular meeting. 2 months ago, Williams Unified School District Superintendent Eric Evans pointed out the district's three maintenance and custodial staff members are now teaching CTE courses 4 days a week at Williams High School, costing the district approximately 72 hours of labor in a month away from their original duties. The board previously discussed hiring two additional maintenance positions at the September 11th regular meeting, but opted to hire only one in order to keep within budgetary needs. With the maintenance demands rising once again, the board discussed hiring an additional maintenance and custodial position for 2025. Just want to make sure we have enough money in the budget before we approve another position, Vice President Carla Dent said. The school district business manager, Brianne Ford, said the district should be able to fund another position as they have been careful about district spending and funding. The board approved the motion to hire another maintenance and custodial staff member for the 2025 school year. And that's Williams Unified School District approves additional maintenance position. You're listening to Northland Views here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. Remember, you can listen to Northland Views streaming on the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org, on your Amazon Dot or Echo device, and you can download the Sun Sounds of Arizona app, and that's available for your Apple, iPhone, or iPad from the Apple App Store, or for your Android device, either phone or tablet, from the Google Play Store. Next, we have Grand Canyon National Park's water lines to be inspected for lead. And this is actually from the 20th of November. Grand Canyon National Park notified residents November 14th that many of the service lines carrying water throughout the park need to be thoroughly inspected to determine whether they contain hazardous materials such as lead or not. On October the 7th, the Environmental Protection Agency administrator signed the final lead and copper rule improvements, the LRCI, requiring drinking water systems across the country to identify and replace lead pipes within 10 years. To comply with these new regulations, a water utilities team conducted a water service line inventory. There are approximately 1,458 service line connections serving both the North and South Rim communities, and the inventory results show that many are made of unknown materials. The water utilities team is launching a comprehensive inspection of the park's water service lines in spring 2025. This effort is anticipated to take several years to complete, as it requires them to physically check each service line. The beginning stages will focus on the Grand Canyon School, Kaibab Learning Center, and the Grand Canyon Clinic. From there, they will expand into the residential areas of the community. Residents will be immediately notified if a service line is found to contain lead. What does it mean when a service line is unknown? When a service line is classified as unknown, that basically means there's no documented evidence supporting material composition. However, the Parks Water Utilities Program will be deploying teams. That's Grand Canyon National Park's water lines to be inspected for lead. Turn now to, after 80 years, historic ledgers returned to Grand Canyon. This is by Alexandra Wittenberg of Williams Grand Canyon News from the 20th of November. Two registers from the South Rim's Bright Angel Hotel, dating back to 1896 to 1904, were recently returned to Grand Canyon National Park after being stored at the Museum of Northern Arizona in Flagstaff, Arizona, for 80 years. The registers were donated to the Museum of Northern Arizona in the 1940s by the widow of hotelier Martin Bugine. The registers show the name, residences, and room numbers of guests who stayed at the hotel. On some pages, there are even little doodles drawn next to guests' names. After decades of safekeeping in the museum archives, the museum returned the ledgers to their original Grand Canyon National Park home. The transfer allows these treasured records to join the National Park Service's extensive collection of historic documents relating to the structures within the park, the museum staff said in a statement. The museum is proud to be part of preserving Northern Arizona history and sharing these significant pieces with the community. Museum of Northern Arizona Executive Director Mary Kershaw explained that the park and the museum have been partners for many years, sharing art, artifacts, and information in exhibits and collaborating on projects. We're pleased to be able to send these historic hotel guest registers back to Grand Canyon National Park, where they originated, Kershaw said. On October 17th, Museum of Northern Arizona archivist Lily Elbaum formerly transferred the ledgers to Grand Canyon Museum collection curator Kim Beesom, Bright Angel Hotel, and Martin Bugine. The Bright Angel Hotel was established by James Thurber in 1896. It was at the head of Bright Angel Trail leading into the canyon. Thurber ran a stagecoach line from the Grand View area to this new location to the west in 1896, building a small wood-frame hotel. At about the same time, Bucky O'Neill built his cabin nearby, calling it O'Neill's Camp. Thurber acquired the O'Neill cabin at about the time O'Neill died in Cuba during the Spanish-American War. Thurber expanded the operation, establishing a tent camp for tourists and calling the complex the Bright Angel Hotel and the Bright Angel Camps. Margan Bugine moved to the Grand Canyon from Williams in 1901. After purchasing the Bright Angel Hotel, Bugine partnered with the newly arrived Santa Fe Railroad to provide tourist accommodations. In 1902, he became the first postmaster of Grand Canyon Village when he opened a post office in his hotel. As a community gathering place, the post office provided one of the few social outlets for the permanent residents of the developing village. However, after only a few years in the hotel business, Bugine sold his interest in Bright Angel Hotel to the Santa Fe Railroad. He'd tired of the political infighting between hotel owners, the railroad, and public landholders regarding ownership rights of the Bright Angel Trail. In 1906, Bugine bought the 160-acre Hance Ranch property and built a 17-room hotel on the land, although he never operated the hotel for tourists. Instead, he began a cattle operation that continued into the 1930s. Bugine died in 1939, and in 1948, the National Park Service bought the land from his second wife. At that time, it was the last privately owned property in the park east of the Grand Canyon Village. All buildings on the property were removed in 1957. Now, the area near the Grand Canyon Hotel is occupied Grand Canyon Lodge. The Bugine picnic area on the Desert View Drive is dedicated to the hotelier. And that's after 80 years, historic ledgers returned to Grand Canyon. Next, we have Ash Fork Water District to discuss wastewater at November 20th meeting. This is by Marilyn R. Sheldon of Williams Grand Canyon News from the 19th of November, Ash Fork. Do you live in the downtown Ash Fork area? If so, improvements made to the area are impossible to miss. A new U.S. post office, new travel centers, new ownership of the Corral Market and former Lulu Bell's restaurant, and additions to the well system are among the recent improvements in Ash Fork. Next up for Ash Fork is a proposed wastewater system, which is necessary to bring the area into compliance with EPA and Yavapai County regulations. The project is in the planning stages. A $75,000 grant submitted by the Ash Fork Sanitation District to the federal government was funded to study the project and to submit a USDA Preliminary Engineering Report, or a PER. David Princehorn of ADC Wastewater Engineering in Mesa prepared and submitted the report for the district. Princehorn will present the results and recommendations contained in the report at a meeting scheduled in the Escalante Room at the Ash Fork Water District, 450 West Lewis Avenue, in Ash Fork, November 20th from 6 to 8 p.m. The regularly scheduled Ash Fork Development Association meeting will follow at 8 p.m. Princehorn, along with Yavapai County and possibly state officials, will be in attendance to answer questions. In the Ash Fork downtown area, there are about 200 water metered services. Of those, approximately 150 still utilize a cesspool system for waste. Cesspools were banned in Arizona in 1972. Only septic or community wastewater systems are permitted to dispose of waste. Currently, there are consequences for Ash Fork property and business owners who don't have a septic system and want to sell their property. If they want to sell, per county regulations, if the property utilizes a cesspool to dispose of waste, it doesn't meet minimum requirements. At that point, they'd have to either install a septic system before the sale or find a cash-only buyer. Many properties in the area don't have enough property to accommodate a septic system. The Ash Fork Sanitary District has been working on the concept for a new wastewater system for several years now. The concept had met with resistance from some homeowners and business owners in the area. Mostly the concerns are about the monetary impact to property owners. Government grant funds will be pursued to fund all or the majority of the $7.6 million system. Additional grant sources will be sought to connect individual properties to the system. There are two alternatives for the project to proceed. First is for the voters in the affected district to pass a resolution for the sanitation district to proceed. The second is to allow the county and EPA to conduct condemnation proceedings. By addressing this issue ourselves, we're preventing the county from using their power to condemn non-compliant properties, said Curtis Keel, chair of the Ash Fork Sanitation District. Condemnation by the county and EPA is the worst-case scenario for the Ash Fork area. Under this option, residences or businesses using cesspools for wastewater elimination would be condemned and allowed a certain amount of time to have a septic system installed, likely 30 to 90 days. If the property owner opts not to install a septic system, the structure could be condemned. And that's Ash Fork Water District to discuss wastewater at November 20th meeting. Our final item, meet Grand Canyon Food Pantry Operations Associate Heather Lopre. This is from the 20th of November. The Grand Canyon National Park featured Grand Canyon Food Pantry Operations Associate Heather Lopre in their newsletter in this week's Community Leader Spotlight. Grand Canyon Village has been my home since 2009 when my husband AJ got hired for his first job in the National Park Service. I'd never lived in such a small community where folks could casually see one another regularly picking up mail or shopping at a market. The opportunity to become acquainted with such a broad spectrum of people allowed me to thrive. Being surrounded by familiar faces perfectly suits my penchant for conversation and spontaneity. Volunteer opportunities I've enjoyed here include participating in many fundraisers and PTA activities, volunteering with the Canyon Closet through several iterations, and most importantly with the Grand Canyon Food Pantry. When the COVID-19 pandemic began in March 2020, I took my commitment to the food pantry to another level. We were all shaken and unsure of what was going on, connecting with others outside and distantly about the fundamental need for food comforted my heart. Grand Canyon Food Pantry President Mike Scott became my friend and mentor in nonprofit community outreach. I knew that service would always be essential to my life. And that we'll have to wrap up that article, Meet Grand Canyon Food Pantry Operations Associate Heather Lopre. This brings Northland Views to a close for Thursday, the 21st of November. This is your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. Thank you for joining me. And remember, you can listen to Northland Views and other Sun Sounds of Arizona programming, streaming on the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org, streaming on your Amazon Echo or Dot device. And finally, you can download the Sun Sounds of Arizona app from the Apple App Store or Google Play Store to play on your phone or tablet.